Initiating startup sequence.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast. Wired Wandering. Postmodern Code.
Look, I don't like your God. Your God scares me.
Well, yeah, but just because God doesn't answer your prayers doesn't mean he doesn't care about you.
Well, then why didn't he give me what I wanted?
Well, God can't just answer every prayer and suddenly give you everything you want. That takes all the living out of life.
What do you mean?
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Liebert. I'm glad you've come along for our journey together. A few weeks ago, my good friend John Armstrong, over at Act 3 Ministries podcast, recommended that I read a fascinating little book called The Shack. Something of a viral bestseller, it has climbed up the charts by word of mouth. Now, frankly, inspirational books typically don't do much for me. Every now and then, someone in a congregation I serve or a friend will buy me one, and it'll kind of collect dust on my shelf. But, you know, stuff like The Prayer of Jabez and A Course in Miracles just doesn't connect with me. And honestly, it makes more problems for us pastor people, because these books tend to have more emotion than substance. So if it's met the Oprah reading list, I avoid it figuring it's going to be more like a chick flick on paper or spiritual fluff like Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth. Now, as an aside, I may take a foray into the podcast he and Oprah did. I did download that onto my iPod. I mean, after all, it was a Wired foray into the spiritual journey and many people tuned into it, but I've tried watching the guy and I just don't get it. It just seems like a lot of schlock Hinduism. But back to The Shack. Now, my friend John doesn't recommend books lightly, so I picked up a copy of The Shack and found it an easy but compelling read. Like I said in my mini-review, it reminds me a bit of Mitch Albom's heart that you get in his books like Weekends with Maury and The Five People You'll Meet in Heaven, but with a solid Christian undercurrent like Don Miller's Blue Like Jazz. However, what really struck me was the portrayal of God that was significantly different than anything I had seen in contemporary popular literature. The Shack actually takes the classic and confusing doctrine of the Trinity seriously. But more importantly, it really makes it come alive. Now, I'll warn you, if you haven't read the book yet, I have some spoilers in here. And I would suggest if you want the full impact of the book, stop the podcast now, read the book, and come back afterwards. It shouldn't take more than 4 hours or so, and if you're like many people who have read the book, you won't be able to put it down until you're done, which means you may be in for a long night. Now that being said, you've been warned. The response to this book has really been interesting. The overwhelming response really has been very positive, but largely voiced by people who have felt disconnected from God in the institutional Christian church. Hence my reason for bringing it up here. That describes a lot of you who listen to this podcast. The Shack's primary premise is about God. That God by nature is inherently and perfectly relational. And we as human beings are created in that same image, to be relational to each other and to God. In a world that seems increasingly depersonalized and hungry for authentic relationships, it's no wonder that people connect with this portrayal of God. On the other hand, the people giving one-star reviews on Amazon or preaching on the twisted truths of the shack, I found one on the net that I looked at in depth, and there's plenty of others. These are Christians who see the book as undermining the certainties of faith, truth, and or the inerrancy of the King James Bible. One writer on Amazon's webpage raised these criticisms. I'm just going to read some selections, and if you look on Amazon, you'll find the whole thing. But he writes this, to the many five-star reviewers, may I respectfully ask you to step back and take a deep breath and then give this book a second look, viewing it only through the prism of Scripture. Upon sober reflection, perhaps you will discern that this is an amazing book and the book for you, if and only if, and here comes the catch, you want to recreate God in your own image. You find Isaiah's portrayal of a holy God seated upon his throne to be a disturbing image. You would prefer a metaphorically cast God the Father as a loving and large black woman named Papa, Jesus as a laid-back and friendly Middle Eastern man, and the Holy Spirit as a calm and cool Asian woman. You want a God so small that she, he, she can just hang out together as best buddies. You want a God who does not hold people accountable for nor punishes sin. You want a God who does not demand that you submit to him or her, but one that submits to you. You want a God who accepts everyone, quote, Buddhists, Muslims, bankers, and bookies, as his or her children, no matter what their beliefs, behavior, and that Jesus has no desire to make them Christian. You believe Jesus lied when he warned, broad is the road that leads to destruction, because the shack, Jesus says, most roads don't lead anywhere. Make no mistake, 90% of this book is spot on, but isn't that exactly what makes the 10% error so insidiously deadly? Look, we can allegorize many things, but we don't mess with the Trinity. This book is a Trojan horse subtly infiltrating the Christian community, one that makes our God extremely small and completely manageable, a God who, in the final analysis, is no God at all. Well, it seems the overall take among the conservative crowd is that true believers should avoid this book, because all the postmodern emergent folks, like me, think it says something true about the nature of God, something true about the Trinity, and something true about what the Christian life should look like. So if you're looking for a book that talks about absolutes, like heaven and hell, being saved and being damned, inerrancy and heresy, avoid the shack at all costs. What you're going to get instead is a picture of a relational God who believes in grace, and not in giving human beings all the answers. Now, I could nitpick with that one writer's arguments and come up with all kinds of proof in the Bible and teaching of the church for the past 2,000 years as to why what he's saying is largely wrong. But that drives me nuts when others beat me over the head with the Bible or what they regard as facts. And more importantly, that then misses the whole point of the book. God is not about abstract proofs and laws, but about personal experience and community relationship. And that, I think, is at the heart of the biblical story and is at the heart of the shack. The aspect that I found most compelling about the book is portraying the Trinity not as a doctrine to be agreed to, but a relationship to be experienced. Over and over, God, who always appears as Trinity in the book, and most of the time is a black woman named Papa, which is actually the name Jesus used for God in the Gospels, Abba, Papa, a Middle Eastern man named Jesus, and an Asian woman named Sereyu. And it's made clear in the book, when they are present, they are not three gods, which is kind of our popular conception, and actually the position of the Mormon Church. It's not three aspects or three mass, but in the mystery of a relationship that's beyond human conception. They are one God. So it's not a theological explanation, and there's no attempt to do that, but it's really much more like what the Eastern Orthodox do. It's an icon. It's a visual representation of something that lies beyond human reason and comprehension, which makes this image terribly unsatisfying for many people, but really much more in line with the traditions of the ancient church than many of the modern Reformation perspectives. Now, Christians have never been good at dealing with what is called the incarnation, that Jesus of Nazareth was both fully human but also fully God. The tendency over the eons has been to favor one over the other. You know, to say that Jesus could build a space shuttle and fly versus the Jesus that never rose from the dead. That either Jesus was kind of a God and drag option or just a very wise human teacher. The shack really points to a different mystery, something beyond either one of those two extremes. A reality that God somehow completely entered creation to be in a redeeming relationship with the human race and with his whole creation, but never giving us the answers as to how. Just the why. And personally, I think that's the much more important issue on the spiritual journey. The why. So if you want a blueprint of how, or you think you already have the blueprint of how, the shack is going to disappoint you. The other part of the book that really jumped out at me that I liked was the question of evil. William Young takes the approach of the book of Job. Now, if you haven't read the book of Job, grab a Bible and read it now. And you're going to see a lot of parallels. In the book of Job, Job is tormented by Satan in an effort to get this righteous man to condemn God and to walk away from faith. Now, despite the popular saying, Job is not a patient man. He complains throughout the entire book that God needs to answer for what has happened to him. But that when Job finally gets that answer, he knows it will make sense. Well, when God finally shows up at the end of the book, Job realizes that he is way out of his league and speaking way out of term. God's vision and understanding is way beyond his own. So Job retracts his complaints and stands silent before God. And God gives an answer much like the one given in the shack. It's an answer of relationship, not reason. In a sense, that's what happens in the book in the great chapter where Mac is put in the place to judge God. And he comes to the same conclusion as Job. God doesn't explain why there is evil, why bad things happen, other than God is not the ultimate cause, but that God will be the ultimate redeemer in the end. Sin is focused in on human self-centeredness, the desire for personal independence rather than the breaking of laws or commandments. It's not an all-encompassing definition, but it's one that works within the context of the book, and I think is biblically consistent, because in the end, the shack deals with the reality of evil not by explaining it, not by judgment, but with redemption, which is the whole point of the cross. And if God is focused on the redemption of his children, then his children should have this same attitude. And that's highlighted in the conclusion of the book. Now, as I said, I liked the book, and I recommend it. And while I wouldn't agree with Eugene Peterson's assessment that it's the Pilgrim's Progress of our time, I think it's well worth reading. Unlike one blogger who was handing out free copies of the book to, quote, bring people to a personal faith in Jesus. He became very disappointed about that when he had a friend who didn't convert after reading the book. I think that attitude misses the whole point of the book and its strength. The Shack is not a conversion tool for evangelicals or any other Christians for that matter. And it's not a dissertation on the doctrine of the Trinity. It's an invitation to explore a relationship with the relational God of the Bible. People who believe that the Jesus in the Shack is too human, you know, frankly, probably don't believe he pooped in his diapers as a baby either. And those who believe the Trinity portrayed in the Shack as New Age inclusivism need to look at the Bible, because the Bible has no problems using feminine and global imagery to convey the identity and attributes of God. The Shack is a story about life with God in the real world of anger and joy, tragedy and triumph. It is not scholarship. It is not a conversion tool. It's a conversation. In the end, the Shack works best as one image of what the spiritual journey with God looks like and is all about. God with us in an intimate relationship, and God with us in a redemptive community that mirrors the divine relationship. Something those of us in local churches should not only be talking about, but living out. Well, that's all for this podcast. I do have some news, though. First off, at the beginning, you heard the new intro I've put together, and I had one listener email me. He was a little concerned for my well-being that I was using Green Day's song Without Attribution. And even though I was under the 60 seconds, which has been the rule of thumb for podcasters for about the past 3 years, I thought a new intro might be in order anyways, as much as I like Green Day. Because we're finally at that point for some positive change in my life as well. If you checked out my Facebook page, you know that I've accepted a new call back in northwestern Ohio. So we'll be leaving Chicago by mid-September, and I'll be the new senior pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Findlay, Ohio. A very cool small city south of Toledo, the home of Marathon Oil. Very happy about how everything has turned out. It's a cool and excited congregation. They've got a great staff, and they've been looking for someone with my postmodern sensibilities, because Findlay happens to be a fairly young town with an average age of 34. A lot of corporate headquarters there and young families, and so some of the things I do are part of that. So many have started listening to Wired Jesus to get a handle on me, and certainly want to welcome them to the podcast. So that's all official now, and I definitely wanted to get this podcast off to let everyone know. I really want to thank everyone for the encouragement and the prayers. And as we start to pack and get moved, maybe I'll get another podcast here cranked out for the move. I certainly hope so. But watch Wired Jesus, watch the webpage, and as always, I'll see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slug like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blee, blee, blee. Well done. Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two. I wrote that. Yeah.